John's congrats to you and the team on Bitcoin Design Guide version 2. You and the community, it's looking really good. Love the updates and the work that's being done there.
After the version 1, we kind of like just straight away decided that we needed to get some of the Lightning content in there. And so we got to work on that pretty much straight away. Everyone's, all the contributors and stuff, they've done a fantastic job on that. Really proud of all the output that we're making there.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I saw that there's going to be some Chinside, which is really exciting. Closing that loop, having people, you know, being able to accept Bitcoin and considering how to make that easy. So bullish on Bitcoin Design Guide right now.
Yeah, that's some work by Patricia. Really excited to see that one come through as well.
Love it. All right, Kamal, we're about 103. Should we hop in?
Let's get started.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Thanks to everyone who's joining live and to those who will be joining in later. This is the 12th space in a weekly series called Adopting Bitcoin, a conversation with Galloway. We hold weekly discussions with thoughtful leaders about Bitcoin and Lightning adoption and about enabling communities and institutions to use Bitcoin, which is our mission at Galloway. This week, we're excited to have John Zbehary from the Bitcoin Design community, and we'll be talking about Bitcoin and Lightning wallet interoperability. This is a really interesting topic. There's a few angles to it, of course, and a lot of nuance. So we'll be highlighting some of the current state challenges and opportunities and, you know, thinking about the UX point of view, ensuring that we deliver good experiences to people who are trying to use Lightning. And so I'm really excited to dig in here. We'll start with some intros and a brief overview of the current state, and then dig into some of those issues users are facing and how designers can think about solving for them. So about 30 minutes in, we can start to invite people up from the audience to ask questions or provide additional perspective. So without further ado, let's hop in. Johns, would you want to give a brief intro about yourself before we get into any of the topics?
Yeah, sure. So Hans Bihari. I work on Bitcoin payment and privacy user experience. I do a lot of research to some, you know, Bitcoin design abstractions and design patterns. And I'm a contributor in the Bitcoin design community on the guide. And I help facilitate some of the community management stuff there. And I'm really, really passionate about Bitcoin. And let's get into the topic, I think. I'm super pumped for it.
Right on. And we also have Kamal at the Adopting Bitcoin handle. And, you know, Kamal, maybe I'll pass the ball to you briefly to give a bit of a high level overview of, you know, why are we here talking about wallet interoperability? Could you set the table a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So it all basically came to my attention when I was in El Salvador. You and Andrew and John, you were there too. You experienced it too. We were in it. And the merchants had QR codes, very low tech, printed out static QR codes, slapped onto their point of sales, which looked really cool and it worked really well with Bitcoin Beach Wallet. But many users who, for example, had Blue Wallet or Moon Wallet or Strike or Phoenix or Breeze, or all of these wallets that are out there, they couldn't. They got an error when they scanned it, and it was kind of confusing for all the people that were in Bitcoin Beach. Why can I not pay to this QR code? Right, it's supposed to be Bitcoin, and I have a Lightning wallet, and it's not working. And the reason for that basically was that it was only a web URL encoded that. Had the username, the Bitcoin Beach wallet username encoded. And so only basically Bitcoin Beach wallet users who were using the wallet could actually like know who they want to pay to. And all the others, it was a little bit more difficult. They had to scan the QR with their mobile phone's camera and open a web browser. We call it the web URL and generate a Bolt 11 invoice there that they then could pay to. So this was obviously not great. And thankfully, there was a contribution by several developers but in the end, I think it was FiatJav who added LNURL support to the gallery repo. And that was rolled out last week or the week before. So now what that enables basically is what we call OTS, which is based on LNURL pay codes. So just pay codes is probably a more fancy name to refer to it. And that is great because Bitcoin Beach Wallet users can now pay to that and scan the same QR and pay directly. And also the latest generation Lightning wallets, like all those with LNURL support, can also just scan to that and pay to it. And it's a static QR, unlike Bolt 11 invoice, where you always have to generate a new invoice. So it's reusable. You can print it out on a piece of paper. So it's a very low tech and cheap and easy onboarding facilitating way to get started to for merchants to Bitcoin. But switching to pay codes, and that was actually the plan, like what we wanted to do right away, presented a couple of challenges, because now user wallets that do not have LNURL support, like Lightning wallets, like there are a couple, like for example, Strike doesn't have it, Cash App just has opened up Lightning for their users, and 36 million, and or Strike or Moon Wallet doesn't support it yet. And there's probably a bunch of that I don't know or not aware. I mean, the space is moving so fast, but they can't. They can only pay to Bolt 11 invoices, so they wouldn't be able to pay at all. And they also wouldn't have that fallback to go to the web URL and generate a Bolt 11 invoice unless we put an extra QR on the same piece of paper, right? Which is obviously like, could be a little confusing for users if there were two QRs. And that's basically how it all got started. To think about it, man, this is really like difficult. We're in a kind of a transition period. Not everyone has LNURL, but it's basically like a must-have on the ground, reusable QR codes, and LNURL is the only way to basically facilitate that. So we started to design a user flow for a QR code that would actually cover all cases, even when a user comes on and with the on-chain wallet. I mean, we couldn't get away from the design with two QRs to this point. So we also reached out to the Bitcoin design community and are going to have a meeting with them. And that's actually going to be our first topic about this, how this could be solved more elegantly. Like the starting point is basically we have this Bitcoin Mecca in Bitcoin Beach, and there's Bitcoin tourists coming there, and they want to pay with Bitcoin with all sorts of different wallets, be it a Coinbase exchange wallet or a Lightning wallet with the LNURL support or one without. And we have to make sure that they all have, like, ideally the same seamless payment experience. And currently that's a challenge. So that's maybe the backdrop. Curious to hear your thoughts about this.
I do have a question. Is the is the payment code like using like the Lightning or Bitcoin URI?
The code is basically an endpoint, the same as the Lightning address uses, and it's based on LNURL pay. So I tried out most of the Lightning wallets that support Lightning address, and they all seem to work with that endpoint. So they can basically scan that QR, that pay code QR, and pay directly. So that works. That's great. But all of those that don't have LNURL support, they get like an error. So.
I see. All right. Well, being on the ground there, it was kind of like, odd when you scan the QR code and like a web page comes up, and then you have to kind of you have to like enter an amount, and then it generates the invoice, and then you kind of like copy that and into the app. It's like, you know, this really janky experience, but I'm really excited to, you know, see these new designs that you guys have come up with. I haven't had a chance to go over them as yet though, but you know, this topic of like reusable payment codes and like static reusable payment codes has been around Bitcoin for quite some time now, right? There was even like a BIP47 which tried to do this for on-chain. It, for various reasons, it didn't get recommended. It didn't move past like draft mode, but it was one of those things where you could like have one kind of payment code essentially that you can give out to people, post on your social medias, et cetera, and have people to be able to pay you without having to. I guess the goal was to, without having to reveal too many of your addresses to them publicly, or just having all your funds going to one public address. I think one of the main implementations for like these on-chain BIP47 payment codes was Samurai Wallet, and their users like really love it. So I don't know if you have ever seen what's it called? The name just slipped my mind now.
Is it Paynims?
Paynims, exactly. Yeah, so everyone was it was these like randomly randomly generated like username kind of things that at, you know, paynim.com or io or whatever it is / you know, like whatever the random username is, and it will kind of resolve to your BIP47 payment code. The users really love that because you know, finally they have a way to like add, like for example, add a contact and be able to just send any amount of funds any amount of time without having to interact with the person that they're sending to and say, hey, you know, can you send me an address, has it been used before, etc. Then like the next evolution of that, I don't think this one really got much popularity was Easy Peasy. I don't know if do you guys know about that one. It's an off-chain
method. No, I haven't heard of that one.
Can
you tell a little more about it?
Yeah, well, I never went into implementing it or so, but I think it pretty much like works. There's some HTTP server that's running, kind of like LNURL, you have this kind of like domain or usernames and stuff that you can query, like Lightning address, and it resolves and whatnot, but I believe that one was for on-chain, though. I don't think it was for Lightning at the time. Yeah. But then now, you know, we got like a LNURL pay, and there's a lot of chat I've seen in the thread here about, you know, BIP, Bolt 12 also.
Yeah, yeah.
All trying to solve the problem, you know, and I don't know if we're there yet. I think we're not. We're definitely not there yet, but at least it's getting closer to that kind of like design, that desired user experience, right?
Yeah. Could I ask you, Johns, to, for the folks, I mean, there's a lot behind sort of LNURL and Bolt 12, maybe like the simple, like high level overview of what those are before we go a little further into like where we stand and where we might go.
Oh yeah, sure. All right, so LNURL is basically a bunch of specifications that deal with how to communicate with your node via HTTP. Via web APIs, basically. So you could do certain kinds of like operations on your node, like for example, like generate voice or sign a message, or whatever. And it's just like the HTTP API on top of that. Now with that, you can start build like with applications and stuff. Anyone could implement it in, you know, whatever language that they want, this API server, right? What this allows us to do, it allows like different services now to be able to talk to one another, different web APIs to be able to talk to one another. So because they like because they're all using this like standard, right? The standard specification. Now, Bolt 12 is something a bit different, although the conversation tends to get muddied between the two. So Bolt 12 is a new invoice format for the Lightning Network, and the current one that's quite popular is Bolt 11. You know, these kind of really long strings that you get with LN beginning, and you send it to someone in order to get a payment. So the Bolt 11, the ones that we use now, they can only be used once, right? Now Bolt 12 has a mechanism to be able to like fetch new invoices from your node directly, but this is happening on the protocol level. It's not happening on the like web API level or anything. So essentially someone gives you this static reusable invoice, and you're then able to at any point to be able to pull an invoice from their node and pay it. I the technicalities of that may not be completely accurate, but I think in essence this is how it tends to work.
Yeah, I can confirm that's my understanding as well, and it's from some functionalities it is similar to what you can do with LNURL, but not from all. So it's not entirely like they're not entirely competing, but in some points they offer the same functionalities. And in this case, like in generating reusable QR codes that you can pay to multiple times instead of once, as it is with Bolt 11, they can both offer that. And the way that they do it is a little bit different. As John said, like LNURL makes the call through HTTP, and Bolt 12 does it peer-to-peer. And in terms of, I think where the specification is right now, I think currently the spec itself is not finished yet. It was good enough for Rusty Russell, who's been basically the author of this, to release it, and he made a nice page about it, bolt12.org, for folks to read up on it and get up to speed on what this is about, and obviously to create some traction. It's also experimentally already available in one implementation, that is C Lightning. Rusty Russell is also working on as the lead. And so the market, so LND doesn't have it yet, as far as I know. And it's like they also, they're not going to have it anytime soon, it seems. So so for the time being, the only way to do it is, and I'm saying that because, well, obviously there are C Lightning nodes, but LND has a huge, if I can call it, like most of the node operators run LND. It's, I think, somewhere around 70 to 80%. So so it's not very proliferated yet. And the only workable solution for the time being is LNURL, and with LNURL pay to make these reusable invoices.
Well, there are other methods to create these. It's not, LNURL doesn't necessarily create doesn't give you a reusable invoice. It gives you something static, which you can query to get a new invoice, right? It's still based on Bolt 11. And we could also think about like other mechanisms as well that allow this. Like, for example, BTC Pay Server, through the API, you can, you know, grab new Bitcoin addresses and invoices for Lightning as well, right? So
yeah,
how I like to categorize this in like a more abstract way is you have this kind of like payment request generator, right? So the payment request is the it's like the thing that you're actually paying, like the final thing that you're actually paying. But then you have these generators which are able to kind of like it's the destination, right? And then you have these generators which are able to somehow source them. So I would classify things like I don't know if you guys know about like output descriptors or XPubs on-chain, right, for like on the Bitcoin blockchain, they allow you to generate new addresses, right? So, and those addresses, in essence, they're kind of like invoices. Something I like to call them invoices as well, because you're only using them once. But those are kind of like cryptographic payment request generators. Then you have the like non-cryptographic ones, which are like domain-based, for instance, like LNURL, or like a link to your BTC pay server, or just a link to something that generates an invoice and returns it back to the device or application or whatever, right? And yeah, so I kind of lost my train of thought there, but
You were referring to these on-chain addresses, Bitcoin addresses that are only used once, but technically, I mean, it was not designed for it. You in on-chain Bitcoin, you can pay, like you can reuse an address, but it's not originally, like the design was not intended for it. It's also like discouraged to do that. But when you send to the same address, when a user does that, the intended recipient does receive the funds. So maybe that's unintended in the design, but it leads to many people, like, for example, for donation pages, to just paste their Bitcoin address statically on their website. And there's still a bunch of pages that do it and websites. But it's discouraged and actually not the intended design. Every Bitcoin address should only be used once. For the sake of your own privacy and also like it affects the privacy of others.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I like to refer to it as an invoice or a payment request, right? Mm-hmm. And it like in that way you kind of like help the user like using this language or like yeah, I think we have to be careful with some of the language that we use to our users, you know, because if you say this is an address, well, addresses are usually static, right? So
yeah.
So if they're static, then yeah, what is the problem with Bitcoin is anonymous? So here's my address and send funds to it, and then you realize after a while it's like, oh, I'm actually destroying some of eroding some of my privacy and like as you said, my transacting party's privacy. Right. While doing so, but yeah, and you're also right. It's technically possible, but also discouraged. But my point here is around like you know you have these payment requests, these payment request generators, and this kind of like search like over the years of users who want some way to be able to. Easily share their payment destinations, right? How does this all into like wallet interoperability? This is the the topic of that we're discussing here. How does this tie into wallet interoperability? Well, we have so many different like payment standards, right? Or payment request formats, right? There's various formats on-chain, and now we're seeing new formats coming in on the Lightning protocol. We're also seeing some kind of like on like these off-chain methods, payment request generators like the LNURL ones. How does this all get tied in together and not make the users go crazy, right? Because when if someone says, hey, I want to send you Bitcoin, right? Then you say, do you support Lightning? Do you support LNURL? And all, it gets kind of mad, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like there is only like one way one problem to solve is basically to agree on a standard that everyone implements and agrees that this should be like, the way everyone should be moving towards, and it seems like we're not there yet. But even if we do, there is also the other aspect that probably it needs some development effort on all the wallet sites. And there's so many wallets out there, and how do you even know? Like there are still Bitcoin exchanges who don't have Lightning support at all. And so you're left basically with all of these multiple with these different compatibility sets. So the latest does start on chain, obviously. It's been always there. Like, I don't know a Bitcoin wallet that doesn't support it. Then Lightning support, Bolt 11 support, it gets a little less. And LNURL support is, again, a subset of that, I would say, from my experience. But it's gained a lot of traction. So especially with Lightning address, a lot of wallets have come on because having a human readable email-like format that you can just type in instead of a long string starting with LNBC is just a lot more convenient, and it's reusable. So that's a great benefit that I feel like a lot of wallets are coming towards, but not all. And some seem to be, like, I've seen Danny De Kruger from Cash App recently asking on Twitter, what should we do for Cash App? Should we implement Bolt 12, or should we implement LNURL, or should we do both? And so there seems to be also a little bit of a divide based on that. Seems to be a little bit like some are waiting for Bolt 12 to happen and reluctant to implement LNURL. Do you get that feeling too?
I'm not sure what the climate is out there, to be honest. I think the state that we're in with this technology is that we're probably not gonna converge on one spec. As you said, there's exchanges which still use legacy addresses, right?
Yeah.
So we have several three. What, we're on the fourth version of addresses now, right? With Taproot, right? And these exchanges have been around for a while, and they still haven't implemented it. So I think a lot of this is probably going to have to be on the application level. So it's what kind of user experience do you want to provide to your users? And are they exposed to these different payment protocols or payment request formats and stuff like that? So I think really it's probably some libraries that have to be made that kind of encapsulate all of these things so that application developers could easily just get them implemented in their app versus, waiting around for a spec. Another example, so we're talking a lot about payment codes and payment request formats and stuff like that. There's other other areas, other objects that have to that we have to consider with wallet interoperability as well. For instance, there's the private keys, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just these 12 words, right? You have to also store some additional information about the derivation path, right? Not easy to just put in your 12 words into another application and boom, your funds are there, because what version of addresses have you been receiving those funds on, right? So that's another thing, it's been around for quite some time, and we still haven't solved that one even, migration of private keys between devices. Then we have also channel states, right? So channel state is different between implementations also, right? So how am I able to move from LND to C Lightning to Eclair to LDK or something like that, right? Channel state is one that we have to also pay attention to. And then I guess this other area that I'm looking into these days is how do wallets communicate with one another, right? So we're building our use of Bitcoin, right? If we look at Bitcoin as the thing that we're all working on, our users of Bitcoin are all using different applications. We want them to be able to communicate across those applications as well, right? How will we transact things payment codes or transaction files or invoices and whatnot to them without having to leave the application. We need some kind of like messaging API for that, right? So it's not just the payment request types. It's like all these other things that we have to think about of communication between applications and also migration to other implementations or applications. And we want that to be as frictionless as possible for the user, because we don't want to have them locked in, right? We're building this like new open financial system. So we can't really like replicate some of these things that traditional finance does, where they try to like lock you in, right? We want users to have the freedom to be able to move between applications. So and I guess like on that topic, we also have to think about like what are the motives behind these traditional companies trying to lock users in, and having like proprietary data formats and proprietary APIs, right? Well, it's because they want to make it difficult to move. They want to increase the switching costs for the user. So then they, even though they're dissatisfied with the service, even though they're providing a crap service, they have to use it because it's just so difficult to migrate to something else. We don't want to do that in Bitcoin. We want to have this kind of like open standard, open formats. So I think this topic is like super important for us to ensure that we kind of like don't fall into that trap of locking our users in.
Yeah, fully agree. I mean, the Bitcoin design community is doing already great work in basically putting out best practices and putting in the research and sharing it with for everyone available who is interested in developing these applications and making it possible to converge and make wallets speak to each other. Obviously, it's way more than that the Bitcoin design community is doing. But I think like it has crystallized as one point where designers too, if they're interested in building a wallet that is basically up to the current standards, to look up what the best practices are, and not try to reinvent the wheel on their own, or go in an entirely different direction to stand out, because standing out here is not being interoperable, right? So maybe one question I have to you, John. Like we have this, if you think about like pay codes, like these static reusable low tech QR codes, and our plan or the plan in El Zonte is definitely to. I mean, it increases interoperability and makes it more seamless than the old QRs that were only interoperable with Bitcoin Beach wallet users, right? How do you think about the general payment flow that a merchant doesn't even have to have like a phone or a point of sale hardware device at their shop? They can just slap on a printed out paper that's very cheap, right? But it comes with a couple of problems, like the user, the payer can scan it, but he has, as you said in the beginning, insert like the payment amount. And there's also that problem that the merchant cannot verify if the payment was really made in that case, right? One way that he could verify would be to look at the customer's face, phone, when it's a face-to-face transaction. So that has actually in the field on the ground in El Zonte proven to be a non-issue. There's very little reports of payment failure or fraud. So it seems to work, and this payment verification problem seems to be kind of just a theoretical problem. Curious to hear how you think about that. Should it be nevertheless discouraged, or is it something that if it works in the field, then maybe like the theory was wrong and we can move forward with this for face-to-face transactions at least and low amount payments?
I mean, I think we have to be careful here because it's it might be a non-issue in that specific microcosm, right? In that community, when you scale this up to a city or something, I could imagine, like, you know, going in New York and you know, saying, "Hey, I paid this." I think they definitely want to, like, verify that, you know, if you're in a bigger city where there's, like, less trusted individuals that you don't see as often, to be able to go to, like, knock on the door and say, "Hey, you know, like, where's this? You didn't pay me. I don't have it on my transaction history or something." But that being said, like, I would ask the question of, like, why are they unable to view the transaction themselves? Is it because they don't have a device, or is it because something else?
I mean, I've heard, like, reports on the ground that it's this low-tech way of creating POS basically is especially attractive for the smallest of merchants. Maybe imagine, like, a street cart, one-man show, who is baking pupusas and putting sticky sauce onto it that sticks to his fingers, and he doesn't want to reach into his pocket because he has a queue of 10 customers who want the pupusa, and he just wants to focus on basically getting the pupusas done, and therefore, and since the value is really low and it's a face-to-face transaction, he doesn't want to pull out his phone with his sticky fingers, would be one scenario. Or the second would be, like, he has a moving cart, he doesn't have access to electricity, he can't charge his phone, stuff like that. So those would be the scenarios.
I see. Yeah. Accepting digital payments and not being connected, that's a very or not having a device to view it. It's I'm not sure how to solve that problem. I think we could probably do some, like, design thinking exercises around that challenge. But with regards to, like, if that person does have their phone, I would say is that maybe we have to start thinking about, like, other ways to be able to prompt that person, whether it's through, like, vibrations or lights or something. And then we could also think about, like, the environment in which the person is in. So, like, is it possible for them to get, like, a phone stand or something and use, like, voice? And some of these things also touch on some, like, accessibility points as well. But overall, just having the payment code available, or, like, in some kind of offline manner, I think it is, it worked well over there. The UX could have been better, and I think it would improve with this payment code stuff that you guys are doing now. If you don't have a phone, I don't. It's a digital payment, you know, so I can't make an analogy of using physical money, but because you actually see that thing transfer, like you have it in your hand, you see the coins at least.
It goes into your cashier, it gets handed over, you put it in your pocket. So that's the entirely different issue for sure. Yeah. But the realities on the ground seem to be, like, these reusable QR codes are very popular and convenient. And I can also see the argument, like, it's very easy to get a merchant started with it, to accept payments, right? I mean, there is virtually no cost.
One of the things that I heard was that someone doesn't want to take the device out of the pocket. I think that's what you said, and with the sticky fingers one. But also, people may not have some people in that community only have one phone and share it. Like, the household only has one phone and share it, or one phone with the app, like with the wallet installed, and they share that phone, and that phone may not be present. I think another option could be for to have like cheaper phones, right? Like, so, you know, these like SMS black and white screen phones, you know, where you get with Galois specifically, since you guys kind of like host this infrastructure and channels for the users, to have some kind of like SMS confirmation, so they could at least say like hear the ding, and when they receive a payment, that does cost some amount, but I think that could be some explore as well. These NFC discussions that are coming up as well for like contactless payments with
tap to pay.
Yeah, tap to pay, exactly. Yeah, I think that becomes quite interesting with something like LNU or withdraw, because what you're able to do then is you're not only, okay, you need at least one device in this scenario, but if the merchant does have their, like a phone with NFC enabled, someone could actually have a card printed out with a LNURL withdrawal that they're able to top up through the app and touch the terminal or the phone to be able to make a payment, just like we do Visa cards right now, right? I'm actually really excited to see. I can't remember the project that did it. Coin something.
Coin Corner
about that. Yeah, Coin Corner. Yeah, they did some demos with this. I think that's really cool.
They had a really nice video where they paid with a stock. I think they put an NFC tag into the sock, and on a Molly was it, and there's also the Bitcoin Jungle community in Costa Rica who's been experimenting with NFC tags, and they actually are trying to build this out right now. And the way it works is basically this LNURL pay endpoint is saved on a very cheap NFC tag. I think I heard something around like it costs around a quarter buck, something like that, like 25 cents or something, which is like also affordable, right, for most people. And but it has probably the same view again with payment verification if you don't have a device. Affordable version again, just a little bit differently. It saves the customer to a scam.
I think it would be a shame not to mention like Ben Ark, who's been doing like a lot of work with this, like all formats of POS systems and stuff. I think every hackathon I see him at, he's always doing some LNURL POS kind of system. He has like so many experiments and stuff that he's done. I don't know if some of those things could be deployed in those communities in Bitcoin Jungle and Bitcoin Beach, but. He would probably be someone great to talk to about those things.
Yeah, I think Ben was actually trying to get some of his Bitcoin POS out to El Salvador. Not sure if he managed yet, but he's been thinking about this for a long time, and he has been on all of the hackathons and hack days and Lightning Hack Days. And he's also going to be in the Lightning Hack Days Istanbul. That's going to be in 8 days, just like you as well, right, John?
Are you going to
be there?
Excited for it, yeah.
Yeah, that's Istanbul. Going to be awesome.
Next week.
So if you haven't heard about it and have no plans for February 25 to 27, there's going to be the Lightning Hack Days in Istanbul, in a really cool co-working space right at the Golden Horn in Istanbul. And it's going to be 3 days of lightning and hacking and innovation and freaking out on layer two. Check that out. It's it's lightninghackday.fulmo.org. That's all the information. John's work and Galois will be participating. Nicola Berti will be there. Myself will be there. Andrew, what about you?
not going to make it from the from this side of the pond. Not this.
Yeah, it's quite a journey. But yeah, hopefully next time. Maybe this is a good time to open up the space for questions or comments. I've seen quite a few members of the LNURL Mafia, if they're still around. I'm seeing Alzirion, who has chimed in, and I know he has an opinion about pay codes. Do you want to come on and let's talk about it? Just to request, and yeah, maybe John's in the like. Where do you? How do you see all of this playing out? Like, do you have a like ideally and realistically, like? How should it play out going forward with all these different payment standards and requests? We have Bolt 12 in the pipelines. We have LNURL with a lot of traction. More and more users coming onto the network. Cash App just unlocked basically 36 million users and gave them access to the Lightning network. How do you see like this playing out are we gonna ever gonna get to a place where no matter what the merchant has, I can pay from my Bitcoin wallet?
Yeah. So my ideal vision of the world is everyone's using BIP21 and it's appended with like a whole bunch of different parameters. So BIP21 is the stat you may see sometimes. It's Bitcoin : an address and like maybe some other kind of metadata like an amount, message, label, etc. But you can also append a Lightning invoice to it, and then maybe since it's such format, you can append other things like say this is like a LNURLP endpoint as well, so it could kind of like encompass all these things. We don't have to make new standards for it; it's there already. Otherwise, we end up getting like that XKCD comic, where it's like, let's make another standard to unify all these standards. We don't want to get to that. On the user experience side, what I would like to see is, I scan something and my wallet tells me, hey, which like how do you want to pay this? Or it defaults to something like Lightning, but I have the option to like pay with on-chain if I need to, et cetera, because all this data has been, like all this payment information, whether it's on-chain and off, like both on and off-chain, have been communicated with me via the thing that I scanned. I want to be able, because we cannot predict what the person paying with or like we're transacting with, we can't predict like what their application supports. So instead of having to do this whole back and forth of like, hey, do you have a Lightning wallet, or you know, do you support LNURL, and you know, users don't care about that, right? So on one thing, they scan it and they're able to pay with whatever network that they have or wherever those funds are, right? So that would be the ideal for me.
And given the state of kind of where we are today, if you were setting up your own small merchant, you know, how might you design, or how might you think about, you know, providing the best payment user experience within the confines of the current state? Can you just speak a little bit about sort of, you know, how, because, you know, we're seeing people in like Bitcoin Lake, for instance, in Guatemala, is onboarding merchants right now, pizza shops and ice cream shops. And, you know, do you have any advice that you would give these merchants in terms of how they can best make things clear for their customers, to your point, so that they don't have to be walking them down a decision tree of how to pay?
Yeah. That's an interesting question here. Haven't thought too much about this, but, I think just using open standards for one, and promoting merchants to use these open standards, is like the one, like the good first step. Lightning is probably definitely something that they want to be able to accept, but also have some fallback for on-chain. I don't know, like for merchants particularly, they need tools, right? So as product builders, designers, developers, etc., we need to ensure that we're, you know, providing software to these merchants that they're able to kind of like debug some of these problems, whether it's that could they could encounter during a transaction. For instance, you know, how they manage refunds, how they, you know, look up customer details, or order details. I would throw it back to us as, you know, like the product community, and try to think, like, how can we design tools better? Because I don't really think we're there yet. You can go like a small merchant, they could probably just have like a basic Bitcoin wallet installed on their app that supports Lightning and on-chain. Sometimes the needs are a bit more than that, right? So, you know, maybe they want to be able to do better accounting or provide invoices and all this kind of stuff. So it's really dependent on the business and the type of merchant. So I don't think it's a one glove fits all kind of scenario. It would have to be something custom to each.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, good answer. Tough situation, and just to kind of reiterate what you all talked about just a little bit ago, you know, some of the solutions for Bitcoin Beach were solutions to real problems, right? Sticky fingers, right? Which you know, the introduction of the QR code there enabled. It actually made accepting Bitcoin easier than accepting cash, right? And so, like, that was a specific example. And I think, you know, I would agree, we as designers, you know, it comes down to us to be listening to those, to the various use cases and challenges that people are facing on the ground, and designing neat solutions, workable solutions for them. So, it's exciting. We're early. We're listening. I'm excited for, again, where we started. I'm excited for the, you know, the merchant consideration or the merchant section in Bitcoin Design Guide as well. And excited to participate in some of those discussions.
You know, like back to this, you know, like phrase wallet interoperability, and like, why does it matter? You know, why does it matter? Why are we talking? That example that you gave in you know, in El Zonte, when people are scanning these payment codes, and so not like the original QRs, and they're not able to send the funds because, you know, like, either the page had a bug. In my case, that was the that was a problem. I couldn't copy or scroll or something like this, you know, like the other person's wallet not supporting XYZ. This is like a friction point that's bad for like our narrative of, you know, saying Bitcoin is open, free, and easy, right? Which is, you know, we're not there. Like it is open, but, you know, we're not at that easy point yet, right? And you have people coming from all different parts of the world with all different types of wallets that they choose. Maybe they make their own wallet, or maybe they, you know, they're using one that's already built. Some of them don't support all the functionalities. You know, the merchant themselves, they need to be able to support all these different payment types and stuff to provide the most frictionless experience. And it's not just merchants, it's, you know, in a peer-to-peer setting as well. Right, if I'm wanting to split the bill and whatnot. So it's very important for us to, like, if we don't have like that one unifying standard, it's very important for us to think about all these cases that we have in the ecosystem right now, to be able to support them, so that our users, which are global, right? Bitcoin users are global, they can, like, wherever they end up, whoever they end up transacting with, they can have a seamless experience, right? And that's why interoperability is so important, to have this kind of seamless experience, no matter where you go, no matter who you're transacting with, or no matter what wallet you choose.
Yeah, fully agree. I think this is not a trivial problem to solve, and we're definitely not going to solve it here, but I think we got a good overview of challenges. And for all those that are listening and maybe have an idea on how to tackle this and how to make these in the very special circumstances that some merchants are in on the ground in El Salvador. If you have an idea how to solve this, there's going to be a project call with the Bitcoin Design Community and Galoy on Wednesday 23rd at, now let me get the UTC time. I think it's at 6 p.m. UTC. You can find the invite. It's open for everyone to join in the Bitcoin Design Slack, which you can find at bitcoindesign.slack.com. And join us if you have an idea how to solve these problems in this period of not complete wallet interoperability. The realities on the ground are that things are moving forward, people are accepting payments. Most of the time it goes well, but ideally that we could account for all the cases, but it's probably a very difficult goal to achieve. We're nevertheless going to try. And if you have ideas, contribute.
Yes, amen to that. It seems like we're about at the top of the hour, and you know, we've reached probably a good point to wrap up. I don't see any questions coming from the audience at the moment. Johns, do you have any final thoughts or announcements or things to share with the group before we sign off?
So just did a soft launch on one project. It's called Bun. BOLT.fun. You can go to the website. And what we're trying to do is to have some like a space for product builders and designers to kind of like do some experiments. It's a sub community of the Bitcoin Design Community. So if you're in the Slack, you could jump in on Bolt Fun channel in there. And we're going to be planning some hackathons. There's an app directory, which we're going to try to like using source to different projects as well. And there's a little bit more technical guide for developers who want to learn how to build Lightning applications and implement things like LNURL so they could like understand that a little better. It's all work in progress. It's all open source. But we'd love some contributors if anyone's interested. And and if you want to attend, it's on the 22nd of March until the 28th. So it's like one of those like FOMO hack weeks, and it's all virtual. So we want to encourage people to be able to like experiment with Lightning, building Lightning web applications specifically during that hackathon. And we want to bring designers and developers together because a lot of these problems involves to come up to these solutions, we need both designers and developers to collaborate very closely to understand the problems, understand the tech and the users, and hopefully come up with some better solutions.
Amen to that. Thank you. And if anybody's wondering why I'm blasting the purple hearts, I don't know, the 100 emoji has disappeared from my app. So there it is from Kamal. Oh, John still has the 100. I don't know what's going on. But thank you to Johns for talking through this sort of difficult and nuanced issue with us. You know, I think that there are a lot of people working really hard to make sort of this idea of wallet interoperability and essentially to create positive user experiences for people that are trying to use Lightning, spend Bitcoin. And so awesome to have you, Johns. Next week, we're going to be hosting Ricky and Laura from Bitcoin Italia podcast. They spent 45 days in El Salvador spending only Bitcoin. They'll be sharing the on-the-ground experience and impression on Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador. So really looking forward to that. That'll be next Thursday. And follow Adopting BTC up there, as well as Galloway Money, to be notified when that that space is scheduled and announced. And check out the Bitcoin Design community and follow John's as well to stay in touch with how all of this this unfolds as we try and, you know, make Lightning easy to use for everybody. So thanks again to everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.